Hello everyone, my name is Barbara Dunn. I'm an astrologer. I also am principal of the QHP, that's a qualifying horary practitioner, which runs all sorts of courses for students. And I'm now about to finish a PhD in the use of astrology in medicine, for which I've been funded by the Wellcome Trust in London. So my talk today is going to be about 17th century shopping for an astrologer or astrologer physician, the sorts of books or instruments or medicines they might purchase in London. First of all, though, I'd like to give a little bit of context to the talk. In early modern England, there was no doubting the relationship between heavenly bodies and lives and events on earth. The extent of celestial influence upon terrestrial affairs might have been debated, but as the historian Keith Thomas points out, the fundamental conception of a continuous pouring down of stellar influence was virtually unquestioned by critic and practitioner alike. The astrologer's extensive client base included aristocrats, political figures, merchants, soldiers, tradesmen, yeomen and servant girls. Simon Forman, 1552 to 1611, and Richard Napier, 1559 to 1634, were perhaps the best known astrologers or astrologer physicians, if you like, in the late 16th and early 17th centuries. Forman was largely self-educated. Napier was a learned clergyman. But the most famous and revered astrologer of the 17th century was William Lilly, who lived from 1602 to 1681 and practised in Hersham, Surrey, but more often in London from his very large house in the Strand, where, as we know, a plaque commemorating his life now hangs. Lilly had a number of very important clients. Ministers, bishops, politicians, even King Charles himself. Although his advice to King Charles, as we know, was mediated largely by Elias Ashmole. Lilly recorded around 2,000 consultations a year, at least between 1644 and 1666. And for more information on the nature and extent of astrological practice, I'd recommend Keith Thomas's book, Religion and the Decline of Magic. Inquiries related to sickness, its diagnosis and prognosis, which might be derived from an interrogation or horary or from a decumbiture, for more general ailments, nativity, and for timing of therapy, particularly its administration and election. There were simpler methods too. The timing of therapy, such as bloodletting or purging, might invoke the location of the moon or ruler of the planetary hour. Importantly, though, astrological interests were not confined to court circles as they had largely been in the Middle Ages. Astrological knowledge was widely disseminated, and the invention of printing was chiefly responsible for this. So astrology had been made available to a much wider audience in 16th and 17th century England than it had been in the medieval world. The crucial period for English astrological publication was the last 60 years of the 17th century, particularly the interregnum, where we find a number of vernacular guides, such as Lilly's Christian Astrology, perhaps the most important, Culpepper's Semiotica Uranica, Ramsay's Astrologia Restaurata, and a number of others. But the lead in this dissemination was probably taken by the most widespread form of literature, the almanac, which cost just a few pence. It was read by a great many people, perhaps for astrological or medical purposes. The data there, the astronomical data, might help in casting a figure. But importantly, in an almanac, one could find advertisements for books, instruments, medicines, and the places they could be purchased, which is what we'll talk about briefly now. They give us a really good idea of 17th century retailing. They also tell us about cooperation and networks. So, what were the products available to Lilly? Who sold them? Where were they sold? The focus here is those astrological astrologically related or astrological medical in nature. In 1657, Nathaniel Eaton sells medicines prepared of herbs, gathered under the planetary influence. His advertisements also include those for a physician who lives at Bun Hill, near Chiswell Street, over against the new artillery ground, at the third brick house with a balcony and a globe at the door. This physician had previously lived at Moorfields. Eaton also provides a singular approved medicine for preventing abortion or miscarriage in women and for making those that are barren become fertile. Some excellent lozenges or pectorals, approved for the cure of diseases of the lung and for plague, are made by Edmund Buckworth at his house in St. Catherine's near the Tower. They're also sold at the shop of Richard Lowndes at the White Lion in Paul's Churchyard. Francis Bond is an experienced oculist. He tends to sore eyes, and he lives at the house of Mr. Joseph Scoot in Tenter Alley in Moorfields. A number of books can be found, such as those written by John Gadbury, and they're sold by John Allen in Paul's Churchyard. In 1661, we find some excellent dentary frisses to scour teeth, made by Mr. Turner, sold by Mr. Rooks, at the Lamb East End of St. Paul's. Other books include one for curing smallpox or the French pest, by a physician to His Majesty. These are also sold by Nathaniel Brooks at the Angel in Cornhill. In 1665, an internal pectoral balsam for distempers of the lungs, made by Thomas C., a licensed physician. And Vincent Wing advertises his books and almanacs, such as his forthcoming Astronomia Instaurata. Lancelot Curlson provides an elixir at his home in Still Yard upon the Great Tower, the Great Tower Hill of London. Interestingly, we also find some apartments in Brownlow Street, Drury Lane, where persons may sweat to what degree they please, there being degrees of heat, and several apartments fit and commodious for private sweating, bathing and fine cupping. Cupping is connected to bloodletting. There are universal pills, very successful in curing ailments, prepared by John Watts, his nephew, and Thomas Feig, an apothecary. John Reeve offers free medical advice, and he is to be found at the Bell in St. Jones's Court in Clerkenwell Parish. He also provides medicines for ruptures or broken bellies. No cure, no money until 2 months after you be well. He sells trusses, the best in England. He can be found at the Naked Boy on the ditch side by Fleet Bridge. He can also be found at the Bell in St. Jones's Court in Clerkenwell Parish. The artificial eyes made by William Boys can be found at the sign of the Golden Griffin in Bell Savage Yard on Ludgate Hill. Perhaps the most regularly appearing advert of all is the True Spirits of Scurvy Grass, famous for their cure of scurvy, dropsy and other general distempers, prepared and sold by Robert Bateman at his house in Paul's Chain near Doctors Common, London. He provides directions for their usage, sealed with his coat of arms to prevent counterfeiting. Henry Coley also advertises medical instruments, such as a new double microscope for observing circulation of the blood. In 1681, just before Lilly himself died, anatomical books could be bought, such as An Anatomical Treatise of the Muscles by John Brown, a surgeon, to the king. This could be bought at the Apothecary's Hall, and Francis Condy would give a printed receipt. So I hope that all this gives a really good idea of what astrologers could do, where they could go and buy things. And we know that Lilly probably didn't buy many medicines, or at least not until later in life when he prepared medicine. Well, he provided medicine, I'd say, from around 1675. But before that, he certainly would have been interested in or buying some of the books, perhaps some astronomical instruments, and various other things, such as blank schemes for casting figures and those sorts of things. So if you'd like any other information, please contact me, and Jessica will provide my details. Thank you. Goodbye.